Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo, bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee. This is Reading with Your Kids. We are beaming out to you and the rest of the world from beautiful Reedville, the gem of Southwest Boston, and we are so thrilled that you are here. At Reading with Your Kids, our mission is simple but powerful, to bring families together through the shared magic of books and story. In every episode, we sit down with fascinating folks who are creating books that open hearts and spark imaginations. If you want to help us grow this mission, please tell all of your family and friends about the show, your kid's teacher, even the crossing guard at school, and remind them that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addicts, Audible, Player FM, Amazon Music. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have a really wonderful show lined up for you today. First up, Scott, Kyle, and Victoria Lakers. Kyle are here to celebrate the other birds and bees, the financial facts of life, money secrets no one ever taught you. And later in the show, we'll have a listen back to a wonderful conversation we had with master storyteller Donna Washington, talking to us about how we can celebrate Kwanzaa with our kids. Hey, my friends, you know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up in the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading with Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading with Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook. Wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy. Grab your favorite bedtime book and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Join us right now from sunny San Diego in California. Our guests are here today to talk about something that's, as we say in Boston, is wicked important. They're here to celebrate their new book, The Other Birds and Bees, The Financial Facts of Life, Money Secrets No One Ever Taught You. Please welcome to the show first, Victoria Kyle. Victoria, how are you?
Doing well, Jed. Thanks so much for having us today.
Delighted to have you on. And the other member of this team is Scott Kyle. Hey, Scott, how's it going?
It's going great, Jed. Thank you so much.
I was told that Scott, when he was here studying in Boston, became a world sailing champion. So congratulations, champ. Why don't we start with you? What's this book all about?
Yeah, so Victoria and I, as we were getting to know each other, were really exploring different aspects of life to make sure that we had compatibility and really forced us to think about our own paths and journeys over time. And one of those issues, of course, was money. So we spent a lot of time thinking about, our upbringing of money and how we had some different views of that, and recognized that, there's really a lack of good financial education, both in the home and school. There are books out there. Many of them are a bit drier and more text-oriented, and it's pretty rare that those kids learn those things in school. So I had written several books before. Victoria was interested in writing a book, so we decided to collaborate and write this book to help the next generation really avoid mistakes from previous generations who, sadly, can often not even afford, small unexpected expenses or living in stress paycheck to paycheck. And so we've outlined through the book really good, simple, effective techniques and habits that can be developed so that one can live a very empowered and robust financially free life as opposed to a stressed life.
Yeah. Victoria, we started talking to our two kids about money when they were very young, when they started school. And one of the things that we told them, we made the choice to send our kids to Catholic and private schools. And we told them at a very young age, hey, listen, we're spending a ton of money right now on your education. They ain't going to be a big pile of cash for you to go to college. So you better do well now and hope for a scholarship or make some smart moves, because it's not going to be there. There's not going to be $400,000 for you to go to college when you turn 18.
Yeah, I think you are unique in parents that do that. And I think there's a few reasons. One, sometimes it's just a tricky topic. Two, a lot of parents don't have that knowledge for themselves, and so it's hard for them to pass it on. I would say I was very lucky that my parents did start to teach me about money, but I definitely didn't grasp all of the concepts. I maybe similarly to your kids knew that there was a certain amount of money that was available for my college. And so I chose to go to school in Canada, Canadian dollar, much less expensive. I was looking at schools in Boston, but decided to go to McGill. So my college ended up being covered, which I was very grateful for. And so now when college is so expensive, I think it's really important to understand, you know, those trade-offs and be able to educate kids. I think college loan debt now is $1.7 trillion. And so it's a huge issue that we're setting kids up for going forward. I don't know if that was where you're going with that question. I feel like there was a few parts I could have taken that.
No, one of the things that people have said to me over the years when they heard me talking that bluntly with my kids, or heard that we're talking that bluntly, is why are you talking to kids about finances? That they're way too young. And yeah. I would point out to them, I said, we're already telling our kids in kindergarten, first, second grade, hey, you got to do well in school so you can go to a good college. You want to go to Harvard. You want to go to Tufts. And so you're telling them that they need to go and make this investment here in Boston. Tuition at the Harvard's, the Tufts, it's close to $100,000 a year. And I don't know many families that have that kind of resources. So kids are taking those loans. So we're putting pressure on our kids at a very young age to think that, oh, I have to take out these loans. I have to do these things and not worry about the future. Scott, what do you think? You're a wise man. You went to school here in Boston.
Yeah, I think thankfully we have a very robust, you know, education system in the U.S. when it comes to choices for beyond high school. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there are many options, both in terms of education as well as, you know, employment. We talk in the book, for example, certain kids will take the path of being more entrepreneur oriented and start their own business. Others may focus more on the gig economy to be more flexible, and others may take a more traditional path as far as employment with a larger organization. So similarly, when it comes to education, there are many ways to become educated, both formally and informally. And so there are trade schools that are available, there are community colleges that are less expensive, but can be a nice pathway either for graduation or to lead into a university system. California has a great university system that allows for lower costs for residents. So, you know, thankfully, unlike, you know, I'm not going to pick on China, but in China, unless you're in the top 1%, academically, you're not going to college at all, right? You're heading straight for the factory or elsewhere. So we are very fortunate to have those options. And it really just comes back to exactly what you did, which is education in the broader sense, as an information and communication with your kids, to both make it understandable what's realistic and what they have, but also what their options are.
Yeah. So, Victoria, did you want to add to what Scott was saying?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say just the idea of teaching kids to do things when they're young, right? We've expanded. We look at mindfulness and dealing with the whole student and a lot of those things. The reason I think you want to do well in school to go to college is so that you can make money, right? Mm-hmm. But you can do all of that and you can make money. But if you don't know how to save it and use it and really leverage that, then sort of the other point is moot. And so I look at people like me that, you know, had similar schooling, and I went to private school too, and, you know, and then came out of college, and there's still a lot of different outcomes for people. And so, you know, if you're educating them and all these other things, like, do you use financial acumen more or like trigonometry, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think we're teaching a lot of these skills that are helpful, but if you don't have that financial literacy, it's really probably, I think financial literacy is one of the most impactful things, regardless of everything else that you learn. And so to be able to teach kids young, and maybe it's, you know, here's your allowance, and figure out how to budget that early on. And so it becomes like a native habit, like nutrition or other things that are core to who we are and how we manage our lives. And so I think it's a big missed opportunity for a lot of people that aren't teaching that early, that has probably one of the biggest impacts on life going forward, because so many things are tied to, you know, college career choices or not going to college, or, you know, it's I think one of the most impactful things.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you. Scott, what are some of the secrets of money that we are not being taught?
A few things. One is, the earlier you start, the better off you are. So if you think about, I'm going to make an analogy here. When you earn $100 and then spend the $100, you're now helping someone else with their financial future. If you earn $100 and invest some of that $100, let's say $20, now that $20 is working for you, and through the idea of compounding. In other words, the money that you earn, it earns money, and that money that's earned the money also earns money. And so it builds on itself. It's Einstein called that the eighth wonder of the world. And the earlier you start that, the better. The analogy I draw is, imagine if you were taking a test in mathematics and you did the first 10 questions, and then one of those 10 questions started doing questions for you. It actually started, those questions started doing questions. And therefore, the next 10 that you do, those questions start doing questions. And it's sort of a weird concept to think about, but that is the magic of compounding. And so when you earn money and then invest money as opposed to spend it, that money starts working for you. It's like having your own little working agent, as it were. And the lesson there is that we don't teach kids is that the earlier that happens, the better. Quite often people think about retirement as being so far away that I'll deal with that later. But if you invest in your future self through saving money now, then that money can work for you. So I would say the idea of compounding is very important. And then I'll let Victoria add to that as well.
Yeah, I think it goes back to just the idea of creating good habits. And I think people get overwhelmed. And I remember taking a self-development course, and people are like, I'm just not even going to look at it, and I'm not going to pay attention. And so if you're going back to this idea of developing it early, right? If you're looking at budgeting and the 50, 30, 20 that we talk about in the book, 50 needs, 30 wants, and 20 savings, and you start to develop that in high school or with your first job or things like that, that can really help set you up for success, using that 20% to then develop savings and use the eighth wonder of the world. A lot of small changes can make a really big difference.
So 50% of your earnings go to your needs, 30% go to your wants, and 20% invest. What would you say to the 20-year-old? I have a 22-year-old niece who is very, very hardworking, has her own apartment, is very proud that she was able to, get herself an apartment and has her own car and is a semester away from graduating college and is working really hard. And she will say, I put like my check and I put gas in the car and I pay for it, for insurance and the rent and this. And then I get towed the other day and I don't have 30% for wants. I don't have 20% for investment. It's so expensive these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes that doesn't work. I would say there's a couple things. One, the idea of paying yourself first. So if you automatically transfer to your savings account at the beginning of the month when you get your paycheck, you know, there's less there. I'm sure we're all guilty of, hey, I'm going to DoorDash something, or I'm going to go out for a couple drinks, or And so it's really the system of priorities. I would also add the importance of an emergency fund, which I think is part of that 20%. So things like I got towed, which I know is incredibly expensive, you know, doesn't completely derail you there. But I think, you know, there's so many things that we, particularly with digital money now, so many things you can, I mean, I submitted a ridiculous amount on Amazon because it's just one click, right? Mm-hmm. And so for all of us, there are certain decisions that we can make that really help us set us up for a good position. Obviously, for some, it's easier than others. But I would say that conscious focus on it. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to have the 20%. Sometimes maybe you just get in the habit of putting in $5 a month into your savings. And it's more flexing that muscle. And then as you are able to earn more, then you can change that. But I think a lot of people also have lifestyle creep. So, okay, I'm making, you know, $1,000 a month. And so my expenses are $1,000, and then they make $1,200 a month, and then their expenses go up to $1,200. And so that's in particular where that kind of thing can come in handy, and that pay yourself first and develop good habits. And then that sets you up as you earn more typically as you go through your career.
Yeah. If I can add to that, so Victoria raises a really important point in that, and we talk about in the book, this idea of setting goals, and goal setting is very, very powerful. I started setting goals when I was very young, including becoming a world champion in sailing when I was 11 years old. But more importantly, when it comes to financial literacy and achieving financial goals, is creating systems. Systems are so important because quite often goals get, you know, after January 15th, we're all motivated about losing 10 pounds, whatever it is, that goal gets thrown into the drawer and never seen again. But if you have systems, especially automated systems, then those can happen independent of any thought or actions that you take. So as Victoria said, by paying yourself first and having that automated out of your paycheck, that's going to really help people achieve their goals in an ongoing way, versus just sort of having to be theoretical and wanting something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scott, we talked at the beginning of our conversation about the fact that schools aren't teaching these kind of lessons to kids. Why in the world not? I just don't understand why our schools haven't been addressing the idea of financial literacy.
Yeah, it's a great question. Thankfully, a little bit more and more, they're now about half the states require financial literacy. Here in California, they just passed a law to offer one course, but not until 2031, believe it or not, that's when the requirement takes into effect. And so I think there's just such an entrenched tradition of what is taught in school in terms of sort of the basics of mathematics and English and language and so forth. And those are all great things, sort of learn how to learn. But often then people leave their education system, whether it's after high school or college, without this practical knowledge. And we talk about kind of the big three. There's your brain, your body, and the bank account. And so the more that we can understand these life skills, then we can apply them long beyond our formal education. And so I wish I had a definitive answer other than it just seems as though it's not prioritized, which is why, you know, the parents can fill that gap and really help out. No different than, you know, other areas of life as well. So that's what our mission is, really to help both parents and kids fill that void that schools are not fulfilling. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I think I would just add, I know schools are pulled in a million different directions, right? And so we talk about, you know, mindfulness to reduce anxiety, and, you know, they're trying to be a little bit more holistic for a child, but there's only so many hours in the day, right? And there's a lot of competing priorities. But versus six states that required it in 2019, there's now 30. And so NextGen Finance, Personal Finance did a report and verified that financial literacy training in high school can impact people that learn it over $100,000 over their lifetime. And that's for everyone in the U.S. So there's definitely a quantifiable benefit. I'm sure for many, it's a lot more. But there's, very defined ROI on that type of education. So hopefully we'll see all states in the next few years move towards that.
Yeah. Obviously, Reading With Your Kids podcast, we're all about reading with our kids. But a lot of people think, oh, once my kid starts to read independently. I sit back, and we encourage them to continue to read with their tweens and teens and talk about it. Definitely, this seems like a book that you, that certainly a teen could sit down and read on his own, but it seems like a book that you absolutely want to sit down and co-read with your kids so you can have those conversations with them. How would you start a conversation about money, Victoria, with your kids?
Yeah, that's a great point. I grew up loving reading. I was the nerd on the playground, and kids would come over and be like, "Do you want to play?" And I'm like, "No, I'm reading." and I'm only a child, which is probably part of it. My mom would actually read to me at dinner long after I could read by myself, and so that was a bonding experience. Probably not up through high school, but I think I was like, oh, we should have included discussion questions at the end, which we did not. So we'll have to add that as an additional resource. But I think particularly because the book is about a mother and father teaching their kid, Ophelia, you know, different topics as she's going through, you know, first job, buying a car, you know, it really starts as a freshman in high school and follows her through all those milestones. Either you would read it with your kids and go through all the milestones, at once and sort of set them up, in advance, or you could, you know, possibly hit each of the chapters sort of as your child is going through that, and then directly tie it to, oh, well, you're getting a car. Let's talk about this chapter in particular. I think it's well set up for those kind of discussions and, you know, read this chapter, come back to me with, you know, 5 questions that you have, or, you know, let's look at this decision you're making in the context of how Ophelia and her friends look at it. So it's very well set up for those kind of discussions. And even if the parent isn't super clear on a lot of the concepts, you know, having them read it as well can be helpful for the whole family. Particularly if you have we have a 15-year-old and a 19-year-old, right? So they're going through each thing on a, you know, not too far apart. And so it can be a really great family discussion and a basis for that.
Yeah.
And if I may add, so because we made it as a story format and we created certain situations between Ophelia, the main character, and her friends, it's quite relatable. So one way of approaching it is to not only talk about what the topic is, but then ask about your child's experiences. So it's a way to both, you know, learn more about your kid. So it's not a textbook that's dry where you're sitting there saying, you know, why do I have to read this? Like, we really try to balance a fun, engaging story with the concepts themselves to create that opportunity for conversation where you can really, you know, ask your kid, like, what do you feel about this? Or do you have a friend that behaves this way? And it sort of inherently creates an opportunity for that conversation.
Yeah. Scott, I was sharing with you early on before we hit record that I'm a stage performer, and you never stop. If you make a mistake, you just keep going, maybe laugh about it afterwards. Would you recommend that parents, as they're sitting down and talking about Ophelia in the book and in the different situations they're in, kind of sit back and share, boy, I wish I knew this when I was 21 because I blew a whole lot of money on cheeseburgers or steak and cheese when I was going to college?
100%. You make a really good point, Jed, which is to say the more vulnerable you are and kind of honest and transparent, I think the more relatable it will be for the kid. You know, we're all human. We've all made mistakes. That's a big thing of what Victoria and I talked about in terms of our financial past as we are getting to know each other and as we are preparing to write this book. We've both made financial mistakes. Everyone has. And I think that'll just, you know, create a deeper connection with your child, hopefully also help them to avoid those mistakes. But that also just creates more a bond and a connection and creates more relatability as opposed to the idea of, you know, no, I've done everything perfectly. So, yeah, I think that's a really good idea to be vulnerable and to kind of share one's own stories in the context of the book.
And can I add on that? I think part of the reason that we did this as fiction is storytelling can be up to 22 times more memorable than just facts. So that's why we wrap story around in characters and everything to make it more interesting and hopefully more memorable. And I think the same thing really applies to parents, right? You hear the, hey, you should budget. And that can go in one ear and one and out the other. But if parents can tie it to something that's deeply personal, So in the moment when they are, you know, out shopping, they're like, shall I buy this or shall I not? It's much easier to remember your parents saying, oh, you know, I did this and it was the wrong reason. And those kind of things are so much more personable. And I think really help create that as something that they can use in their own moments of decision that isn't there unless you're telling those kind of stories and giving personal examples.
Yeah. Scott, I'm just going to ask you, you know, we're hearing about AI these days and all the, and I certainly use it. It's crazy what it's able to do. What about AI? And, you know, if a parent comes up to you and says, yeah, I'm going to sit down and talk to ChatGPT about creating a budget and where I should invest in all of that. Any red flags or green flags that you want to throw and warn people about?
Yeah, it's funny because when I was in grade school and high school, we had our encyclopedias up on the shelf, all 26 letters worth that we'd have to pull down to look something up. So indeed, how times have changed. I think AI, ChatGPT and others can be a great resource, but I think it's just one tool and a starting point. The reality is I found that quite often ChatGPT wants to be very agreeable with you. And so if it sort of tells you what you want to hear, I'm sure it'll get better over time. So, you know, I think it can be good for validating facts, things like that, and general concepts. So I would view it as, you know, one tool in the toolbox for sure, but I wouldn't rely 100% on it.
Yeah. And what about talking to your kids about having a financial advisor? When should we think about that?
That's a great question. Yeah. So we have a lot of clients whose children are also clients. And we offer always to, you know, educate the kids just as part of our services. Because as you said, and rightly so, you're never too young to start to learn about these topics. Even if they may not, you know, merit, you know, being a client per se, if you find the right advisor, you know, he or she can also be part of the solution. So the parents can be involved. Hopefully schools are involved. You know, we're adding our content as well to help people, but also, you know, a formal advisor could also be, you know, part of the equation as well. I found that with my kids, for example, even though I was a world champion athlete, they often wouldn't listen to me when it came to athletics. They'd listen to their coaches at clubs and school and so forth. But for some reason, you know, dad's advice wasn't always taken. So having a third, you know, party, kind of an objective person, can be a great part of the total equation.
Yeah. And Victoria, you've been talking, mentioned mindfulness. It seems like this would be a great thing just to, as we're talking to our kids and encouraging them to be mindful throughout their every day, this is just one more thing that we can remind them to be, you know, be grateful, be mindful, and be smart with your money.
Yeah. And I think, you know, financial stress can be such a huge issue. I think I haven't looked at the reasons behind divorce lately, but I think it's, you know, it's a big part of it. There's no doubt that people that are struggling to figure out how they're able to make rent or other things, you know, that takes up a huge amount of mind share. And so to be able to sort of think ahead and plan and not have as many of those challenges can be a huge help in creating a fantastic life, as can, you know, the way that you think about things and gratitude. It's very easy if you see people on Instagram, right, to focus on all the things you don't have and not realize that either people aren't paying for it or, you know, they're coming from a different place. And so the way that one relates to it and reframes certain things, I think, is super helpful.
Yeah. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about The Other Birds and Bees, The Financial Facts of Life, Money Secrets No One Ever Taught You. Where can we find out more about the book, friends?
Yeah, there's a website, yourfactsoflife.com. And then also if you go to Amazon and search Scott Kyle, The Other Birds and Bees, you'll be able to find the book online there. We have the digital copy and print copy there as well, and a link to our website, which has a lot of additional resources on there as well, different blogs that tie into the book. So there's a lot there for people to look up, even if they're not fully buying the book.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the authors of The Other Birds and Bees, The Financial Facts of Life, Money Secrets No One Ever Taught You. Our guests have been Victoria Kyle and Scott Kyle. My friends, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks, Jed. Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork spicy Chicago fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com, promo code READ to get 20% off, because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. Joining us right now from Durham and the beautiful state of North Carolina, our guest today is here to help us celebrate the holiday of Kwanzaa. She is the author of Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa and the Story of Kwanzaa. Please welcome to the show, Donna Washington. Hey, Donna, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you so much for having me today.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Well, thank you. Happy Kwanzaa to you as well.
Thank you very much. You know, this is a holiday that I'm very familiar with the name, but not so much familiar with the traditions and the origins. And I think that that's probably the case for a lot of people. Can you tell us a little bit about the holiday?
Well, Kwanzaa is actually considered a festival.
Okay.
Because it takes place over the course of 7 days after Christmas. So it starts on December 26th and goes until January 1st. And the origins of it are more recent than a lot of the other festivals and holidays that we celebrate in America. In the 60s, a man named Milana Karenge was noticing that even though we have festivals that are based on traditions from other parts of the world, there was no national festival based on the traditions of the African immigrants that were here, the ancestors of those who came here from Africa. So he basically pulled on different traditions from around the diaspora and in Western Africa, and also tweaked things here and there that are a little American, mm-hmm. and he put together Kwanzaa. And so Kwanzaa is a celebration of community. So after we've had our celebration of Christmas, and Hanukkah is usually over by this point, and Ramadan, there's a whole lot of festivals of lights that happen at this point in the year. And that's mostly because, you know, the people are going into the darkest part of the year. So all over the world, in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, people had lights, they had candles and lights, and it's to bring back the sun and to sort of gather together. So Kwanzaa is a festival of lights where we gather together. We tell stories that come out of the African and the African-American tradition. We do activities that are for building the community, the idea that you leave your community more wholesome, a better or more beautiful, and a more cohesive place. So during Kwanzaa, every morning we get up, we light the kinara, which is the candelabra, and each day has a different name in Swahili. He chose Swahili because it's spoken all over the African world. And then each day has a theme, right? So my favorite one is Kujichagulia, which means self-determination. It means that you determine for yourself who you are and what you do, and you don't let anybody else tell you who you are. And there are other days where you do Ujima or Ujamaa, which is working in the community or spending money in businesses that are part of the community. So we volunteer on the day that is community involvement. Sometimes we donate food to food banks. Sometimes we serve people. Sometimes we work in animal shelters. And then on the day when you're supposed to do cooperative work and economics, we go and patronize community businesses. So not big box stores. Like, we don't go to Target. That's not the day to go to Target. That's the day to go to the small store that's in your community. And when Milana Karenga originally created this festival, it was very much centered on African-American businesses, which there were a lot of them. And so the idea is to be aware of where those businesses are in your community and go and patronize those and make sure that you are spending money in your community that will come back to your community and not go out to larger corporations that aren't part of your community. Yeah. And also, too, and then on, like, the day for creating art, there's a day where you're supposed to create art. The idea is that you leave that art in your community. It can be like a performance. It can be music. It can be painting, storytelling, all of these things to bring us together and help us recognize how we're all part of each other. And that really is what Kwanzaa is about.
And that's beautiful. All of those activities to remind us that we're connected and part of a beautiful human family. That's it certainly is something that I want to be mindful of when I'm celebrating Christmas or when I'm celebrating Thanksgiving. It's I think Kwanzaa is in those ideals. I think that's something that we should all be celebrating.
I think that's why it's catching on the longer it exists. Mm-hmm. And people are becoming more aware of it. Because, you know, between December, the end of December and January, normally schools are still closed. Mm-hmm. You're still with your family. People are still traveling. And when my family travels, we take our canara with us, which is, you know, the candelabra, and you put the candles in. And each day we light the candle. And typically what we do is we tell a short story based on the idea of the day. Whatever the idea of the day is, we tell a short story, and then we have an activity as a family that, you know, embodies that particular day. And you can, there are cities that have whole festivals, right, where you can come and there's an entire day, there's music, there's dancing. And of course you have the big feast of Kwanzaa, where you should eat food that come from different, that are celebrated in the African American community. And if you don't know what those are, this is a great time to get cookbooks. Carla Hall has some great cookbooks out. different cookbooks that will have great recipes for families that you can prepare together. And you eat black-eyed peas because those are for luck. And you make little cakes called Benny cakes with sesame seeds. And sesame seeds are also for luck in the new year. So there's just lots of little things. And it's a really fun holiday or festival to celebrate.
Now, is it, you know, one of the words that we hear, phrases that we hear, is this idea of cultural appropriation. Is it appropriate for me and for my family to celebrate Kwanzaa?
Yes. I think everyone should celebrate it. the thing about a cultural festival is that every big holiday that we celebrate in our country was at one point cultural somewhere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So only a small group of people celebrated it. And the only way festivals and holidays survive is if they become more widely accepted. There isn't any reason why, if you live in a community where that is not diverse, that you don't actually have any minority businesses in your area and you don't want to drive 40 miles to go, you know, patronize one, you can still look around your community and see where are the small stores. Where are the stores that are owned by the people in your community? What can you do in your community that would make your community better? Do you want to go and work at the homeless center mm-hmm. To serve food? Do you have things you want to donate? Do you have, I don't know, you're going to go and work at the animal shelter? There are all sorts of things in your community where people need help, or that you, as someone who may not ever need any of those services, should still be aware of what they are. And it also means that you're aware of all the people in your community, not just the people you live around. Mm.
I think that is a really profound and really important thing for all of us to be aware of, you know, because it's really, I started noticing this when I started to approach being 100 years old. I started to realize that I could walk into a group of teenagers, and unless one of them knew me beforehand, I was invisible. You know, mm-hmm. If there was just a group of teenagers in a store or whatever, and I walked in, they didn't see me at all. They weren't aware of me. And I have a feeling, unfortunately, that there are people in my life that I don't see, and I need to train myself, and we need to help our kids understand that we need to make the effort to see everybody that's around us.
Right. And I think that when we talk about cultural appropriation, mm-hmm. which is a very good thing to bring up, because that is a big thing that people are talking about right now. I think what we're really kind of concerned about is cultural misappropriation. Mm. And that's where you take something out of a culture and then you twist it or change it so that it doesn't resemble anything that has to do with that culture, and then you use it for something else. Mm-hmm. So an example of that would be, like for instance, in Native American culture, mm-hmm. where the most honored person in the community would have one of those beautiful headdresses, mm-hmm. and they're, that is something that is very much part of that culture. If you take that symbol and then you do something with it to make money, or you do something with it to, I don't know, like I saw one really kind of cringy picture of like a model, like one of those really skinny, skinny models. Mm-hmm. And she was wearing barely like really, really short skirt and like crop top. And she had on one of these gorgeous headdresses, which is really not an okay thing mm-hmm. to do. Mm-hmm. So that is where you have taken a symbol and taken it out of the culture, and then because it's pretty or because you like it, you did something with it, and it's actually disrespectful mm-hmm. to that culture. Mm-hmm. This Kwanzaa grew out of a need for African-American cultures or communities in this country to have something to hold them together. Historically, African-American communities have had a lot of strife in terms of trying to not be separated. Like, you know, when they built the highways, they built highways between some of those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So this movement to create Kwanzaa was really about bringing us together and making us see each other. Mm-hmm. And that was such a huge problem even now today, I guess, sure. in many ways, mm-hmm. but definitely in the 60s, there was a lot of fighting for civil rights and the right to be seen and heard. And it's not just a problem in African-American communities. As you said, different age groups even don't see each other. Mm-hmm. I remember being in university. Do you remember being at university or in school?
It's hard.
And I was always surrounded by 20-year-olds. This is the only thing I ever saw. And then I graduated from university. I was like, look at all these children. Where did all these children come from? Were there always children here? So we do. We section ourselves off based on what we're doing in life or how old we are or where we live. And Kwanzaa is a time where you take the blinders off and you look around and you see everybody and you ask yourself the simple question, where do I fit in my community? Help my community.
I love that. Where do I fit in my community? How can I help my community? That's such a beautiful set of questions to ask ourselves and to help our kids ask themselves and to help our kids answer. Tell us how reading the story of Kwanzaa and Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa can help families do just that.
Well, The thing about this, the oldest one, I'll show you really quickly, the story of Kwanzaa. The thing about the story of Kwanzaa, I know, no one can see it, I'm just holding it up. The thing about the story of Kwanzaa is that it is for a slightly older audience, like you know, third, fourth grade, but it explains it. Mm-hmm. It straight up explains what all the symbols are, explains why the holiday exists, is a nonfiction book. And if you wanted to learn about Kwanzaa, then it would be great to like read part of it every night over the course of the festival. And then by the end of the book, you would have a really good sense of why we do what we do and or what Kwanzaa is all about. And within that book, you have recipes and crafts and just various sections that explain what you do. Mm-hmm. The story, Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa, the picture book, the best thing about it is you don't need to know anything about Kwanzaa to enjoy that book. And by the time you're done, you'll get a sense of it. Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa is about a little rabbit who doesn't like Kwanzaa. because it's complicated. All the days are in Swahili, and you do these things. You make zawadi, which are little presents, only he's the littlest rabbit, and his presents don't look good. So he's always ashamed to share them with people. And the only thing he likes about Kwanzaa is the karamu, which is like the big dinner at the end of Kwanzaa. It's like the Christmas dinner, or so it's huge, right? But the person who makes it is his grandmother, and she is not well. So then he's like, who is going to cook? Who will cook if my grandmother is unwell? And he asks his mother, and she's like, really? Your grandmother is sick, and all you're worried about is eating? You go outside and play. So he goes outside, and he gets this idea. He is going to make karamu. He's going to do it himself. And off he goes. And as he goes through the meadow, he encounters his neighbors, and they ask him where he's going. And he says, oh, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make a zawadi for my grandma. She's not well. And off he goes. And his neighbors are, oh, they didn't know what a zawadi was. They didn't know what karamu was. They had no idea what Kwanzaa is, but they know his grandmother. And his grandmother makes toys for the little kids when they get, you know, grumpy, and she helps them, like, make little boats. And when Papa Squirrel loses his nuts after she's helped them hide them, she remembers where they are and helps them dig them up in the spring. So she embodies all the things of Kwanzaa. And by the end of the day, Little Rabbit is really kind of bummed because he cannot find anything. And his attitude is, I am the littlest rabbit. I cannot do anything. And he goes home, and there's a big party in his house because everyone who heard about his grandmother decided they were going to do something to help. And so the frogs are there, and they're singing, and they brought, like, lanterns, lily pad lanterns, and the crickets have come. They're playing music, and all the animals have come, and the birds have come, and everyone brought food. And so they're all together, and they're sharing. And after it's over, Little Rabbit is really upset. His grandmother said, what is wrong with you? We just had the best caribou ever. What happened? And he was like, I was the only one who wanted to do something. And I'm the only one who didn't do anything. Everyone else brought everything, and I didn't do anything. And his grandmother says, you had a dream, and you took your dream out and shared it with everybody. And the dream brought everybody here tonight. You did the biggest thing of all. And that's his kuji chagulia, his self-determination. And she says, you did a huge thing. And he says, wow, I didn't realize it was that big. And she said, of course it is, because I have faith in you. That's just sweet. A really sweet story.
That is beautiful. I love that. What a – I'm imagining back 20, 29 years ago when my kids were still sitting on my laps. That would have been such a fun, beautiful story to share. Talk about helping – your kids get a sense of empowerment and understanding that even no matter how small they are, that they're actually, in the case, there were so many people in my family who came back to the family because my son was baptized. And that's the first time they'd spoken together in decades. So beautiful. Oh, wow. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, if my kids were 4 or 5 again, I think one of the things that I would want to do is just to go out and celebrate every single holiday festival I could. We'd be partying all year long. But beyond that, we'd be giving our kids a very concrete and very – well, I was talking about, you know – being in the present and, you know, helping our kids be intentional. What better way to help our kids be intentional than to celebrate and to celebrate each other and celebrate our communities?
Yeah. Well, I think that's exactly the point of Kwanzaa, mm-hmm. that it's not just that we're thinking about everybody, which is nice, mm-hmm. but we're actually doing something. Kwanzaa is like it's a civil rights festival. I mean, there's really no other way to think about it. It was built with that mindset that it's an interactive festival. You go out, you get your hands dirty. You know, you go out and you find people. Whether it's, you know, like one of the things we have here in Durham is we have a huge, it's not really a store, but it sort of acts like a store. and it has baby supplies. So if you're a mother and you can't afford to buy formula and you can't afford diapers, there's this place you can go where you push your buggy through, you gather stuff like you're shopping. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to pay for that. It's a way to have dignity even when things are really difficult. And it's not a question of getting a handout. It's a question of what is a human need. Mm-hmm. And so we donate to that particular organization. And, you know, during Kwanzaa, we actually physically go, because normally we send the money, mm-hmm. because they know what they need. during Kwanzaa, we call and ask what it is we can bring, and we personally go out to the stores, buy the things, and bring them to the center. So there are things like that, that we take the extra step so that we can actually see those things. Mm-hmm. And our kids, it really had a huge impact on our kids. My son is 25 and my daughter is 22. And they are still, they're still really active in their communities and they still give back. But here's something that we got because of Kwanzaa, but was great all year. Something called the Money Savvy Pig.
The Money Savvy Pig. I am intrigued.
It is a piggy bank with sections. So one section is for spending, one section is for investing, and one section is for donations. Mm. And so you can open each section individually. And whenever we gave them their allowance, we would, you know, we would tell them, you have to put money in the investing. You always should do that. You can decide how much you want to put in donation and how much you want to put in spending. And then at twice a year, they would open their donations and we would match or go up to $100 for whatever they have in there. And then they would personally go and do their donations, whether they donated, and they could choose whatever they wanted to donate to. So at Kwanzaa time was the second time that they opened it and did their donations. And it, like I said, it made a big difference in terms of how they even think about what money does, mm-hmm. and what it's for.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that idea of the kids having a piggy bank where they're intentionally placing, this is for spending, this is for investing. Boy, if only people started thinking about investing at an early age. And this is for giving back to the community. And I think mm-hmm. that's... So wise. We've talked about teaching our kids financial literacy on the show so much. It's something that's so important, but it's something that we really don't spend a lot of time talking to our kids about. So what a beautiful idea to share with our audience today. I love the story of Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa. I have a feeling that there's a lot more stories that Donna Washington has shared with the world. Where can we go to find them?
Well, if you want to watch me tell a story, you can go to YouTube and type Donna Washington Storyteller into the box, and I will tell you hours worth of stories over there. Some on my channel, most of them are people who've like surreptitiously videotaped uh-huh. me while I'm performing and then uploaded the video later. I also live on the internet at dlwstoryteller.com. And that's my website. And you can find out more about me than you ever wanted to know, including the books I have out. And I have, 13 recording albums of stories.
Wow.
So you can get MP4s on Amazon and Spotify. So all of the stories that I tell are there. I don't sing. So all of my recordings are spoken word recordings. Mm-hmm. And I visit, you know, you have gotten out of the visiting schools game. But I travel all over the world and tell people stories. And a lot of times in the summertime, I'm in libraries at all over the country. So you have a chance to run into me.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to it. And I want to extend an invitation to have you come back in the future to talk more about your MP3s and your storytelling and your other books.
All right. Sounds great.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Little Rabbit's Kwanzaa and the Story of Kwanzaa, Donna Washington. Donna, thank you for helping us celebrate this beautiful festival.
Well, Jed, thank you so much for inviting me. This has been wonderful.
That was a fun episode of Reading With Your Kids. Thanks for hanging out with us today. If this episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please share a link to the show with someone you love. Maybe post about it on your socials. We'd be so very grateful if you could leave us a 5-star review. And of course, please don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode of the show. We'd also love for you to connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at Reading With Your Kids on Instagram, at Jed Lee Magic on X. Our YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids, and our website is readingwithyourkids.com. So very grateful for the people who made this episode so amazing, starting with our guests, Scott and Victoria Kyle. Please be sure to check out The Other Birds and Bees, the financial facts of life, money secrets no one ever told you. And also want to thank Donna Washington. That was a great conversation we had a few years back. Want to thank our sponsors. You know, real magic happens when you support our sponsors and use our promo code. It's READ, R-E-A-D. You get a great deal and we may earn a small commission. And that helps us keep the lights on and helps us keep spreading the joy of reading together. Want to thank my team. They deserve a big thank you. Chris Daugherty, Fatima Khan. I also want to thank my beautiful wife for all the love and support she shows me every single day. And of course, we want to thank you. You are amazing, and you're making the world a kinder, more empathetic, more loving place every time you read with your kids. Till next time, go make some reading magic happen. What?